It's Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the Poor People's Campaign. Tonight's guest, the Reverend Andy Young, Executive Vice President of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, a co-leader of the Poor People's Campaign in Washington, D.C. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. The Poor People's Campaign is in deep trouble. Heavy rains and organizational problems have apparently decimated the population of Resurrection City. A change in the leadership of the June 19th Solidarity Day demonstration was publicly blamed on Byard Rustin's lack of militancy. Being a part of the establishment and privately blamed on his demands of Congress for a poor people's bill of rights being so revolutionary that the establishment was getting too upset. Reverend Abernathy says Resurrection City will be maintained in Washington after June 19th, but even liberal friends of the Poor People's Campaign, such as Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon, have indicated it might be wise for the city to be torn down as soon after the demonstration as possible. And then there's the other side, that is, leadership of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference itself. Publicly, it presents a unified or united front behind Reverend Abernathy, who has led it since the death of Dr. King. Privately, it seems to be splintering, with individual power pockets forming behind, such as the SCLC's Executive Vice President, the Reverend Andy Young, who's our guest tonight. Good evening, Reverend Young.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Last night, Eric Severide of CBS referred to the Poor People's Campaign as leaderless. My first question, sir, is it?
Well, I'd say it's anything but leaderless. I'll admit that we do have a much greater leadership problem. But the problem is not in the quality of the leadership. The problem is in the enormity of the problem. In all of our past demonstrations, we've been dealing with one simple issue, such as the right to vote or lunch counters. Here we come to the nation's capital, we raise the whole question of poverty, but we find that poverty is not just a simple issue. Poverty is a matter of food, poverty is a matter of jobs, poverty is a matter of housing, economic development, and 25 or 30 other problems which are distributed among a half a dozen federal agencies. So admittedly, we have been trying to shift gears from the kind of rather simple, well-organized operation that we became accustomed to in the South to a much more complicated and sophisticated problem that we're meeting here in our nation's capital. But I'd still say that that's not our biggest problem. I think you were probably more right in your opening statement when you said that our problem is the weather, Resurrection City. Usually we have been living with people in a community where their residences were already established. In this Poor People's Campaign, we have had to provide residence, we've had to provide food, we had to provide boots and raincoats when the deluge hit us several weeks ago. We've had to put in a plumbing system, and we've had to really run a city, and this is something we'd never done before, and it's really taken a toll on us. Now I think we are just about to adjust to most of the problems of city administration and management, and I would say that the leadership of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Poor People's Campaign, which has been bogged down with those kinds of problems, will now turn itself much more to its action program and to the demands. Now, we also had another factor which we've never had before. That is, up until now, our movement has been largely black, oriented toward the needs and problems of black people alone. But on this occasion, we've been joined by poor whites from Appalachia and northern cities. We've got a large Mexican-American delegation from out in the Southwest. We have Puerto Rican delegations coming in from northern cities, and we have about half a dozen tribal groups of American Indians represented. So just the group dynamics of pulling together in one coordinated program so many different minorities with so many diverse interests, plus the fact that we didn't know each other before, has taken a little more time than we would ordinarily allow in getting organized.
Reverend Young, aware of the fact that it is an enormous task to attempt to almost build a city and to bring thousands of people from across the country to Resurrection City, is it not our belief that there should have been, or could there have been, better planning?
Well, there couldn't have been, because one thing, we were playing a kind of touch-and-go game with the administration. To have asked for a permit and started building the city in advance would have meant that we would have had to go to the administration and almost beg for a place. Had we done that, then we would have been at their mercy, and they could have selected a place over in Virginia, up in Maryland, which would have been strategically terrible for our purposes. And so we couldn't go and ask for permission, you know, 3 or 4 months in advance and get settled down. We had to decide where we were going to live, where we were going to make our camp, and then put the administration in the position of having to react to us. I think that because we took that rather strong and militant stand, that the administration did decide to make arrangements for us there in West Potomac Park, right by the tidal basin at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial. Up until we took our position that this is where we were going to be, we heard all kinds of rumors about where congressmen and everybody else thought we ought to be. But we stuck with our position that we were going to be right there at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial, in the heart of Capitol Hill area, and that was where we were going to make our city.
What were some of the places that Congress recommended?
Oh, well, you see, we entered into no really official negotiations with them, but there were things released in the press which said that I think one congressman offered a bill that no site would be used above Anacostia or something like that. I don't even know where it is. But it would have put us somewhere down in Virginia. Another group talked in terms of an old Air Force base, which was some almost 7 or 8 miles from downtown. There was a college that offered us a place in which has been quite helpful, but they were about 14 miles from the center of town. So it was quite strategically important that we get the kind of site that we now have, and we consider that quite a victory. Now, when we felt that the site was so important, then that meant that we had to hold up on the building of the city, the laying of plumbing, and the stringing of lights and wires and that sort of thing, which that wouldn't have been any problem either. We could have completed that on schedule, and yet we've had the hardest rains through this period that I think Washington may have had in several years.
Reverend Young, aware of the various problems that the Resurrection City has had in attempting to conduct this particular campaign, and with much of the country in sympathy with the campaign, there seems to be strong resentment from white Americans. And it is our understanding that the recent Lewis Harris poll has shown that white Americans by 61% to 29% have stated that they are opposed to the intent of the campaign. Now, what is your feeling about that?
Well, I would say that that's about true, you know, to course. But white America would like for poverty to go away. White America would even like to deny that people can't eat. White America would like to deny anything that brings about any, you know, discomfort to them. And I think that part of the drama and part of the problem of a direct action campaign is to make white America and black America and governmental America and business America and everybody else say, well, yes, we do have a problem with the poor. We do have, America is not just. It does not treat poor people fairly. It provides tremendous subsidies for rich farmers, but it refuses to give food to poor farmers or to people who have been put off their farms. It subsidizes middle-income housing, but it refuses to subsidize and create the same kind of federal programs to provide housing for the poor. And you could really go right on down the line. Our experience has been, and if you look back over the record, when we started in Birmingham in 1963, Washington Post, which editorialized against us yesterday, started out talking about how untimely it was, how unwise it was. In fact, if you remember back prior to the 1963 March on Washington, many of the same forces that are against us now were against us then. And yet we did pull off a successful campaign in Birmingham and a successful march on Washington. And many of those people who were against us initially rallied to the cause because we were able to dramatize that that cause was right and just. I'd say we're in the same position now. We were in a similar position in Selma.
Reverend Young, many of our night call listeners would like to ask you some questions and respond.
Sure.
And we'd like to give the telephone number. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. If you're calling from out of town, as yet we have not been able to have you to call collect, but if you'd like to call, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. That's area code 212-749-3311. We'll welcome our first Night Call listener tonight, Mr. Gilbert, who's listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes. I mean, you know, the existence of a movement like this, I mean, is saying that the government is not aware of the situation. Now, I mean, what will it take for the government to recognize this when they know that it exists?
Well, they are aware of it, people don't like to do anything about it. Because they'd have to change business as usual. You see, it's very comfortable for the government to go on giving military contracts, spending its budget amongst its friends. But when you have to force them to readjust their priorities, then it requires them sacrificing some of their self-interest. And groups in power don't do that until you create the kind of situation where they are forced to do so. That is, that the people of America have to cry out so much in behalf of the poor that some of the money that's now going to build luxury apartments would be used to build slum housing, or housing to replace the slums for poor people.
Well, would you say that, well, the big business are making their profit from the poor?
Sure.
All right. Now, what you're saying is to tell the big business to take away their profit. Now, I mean, if you're making money from the poor people, and you don't care how you're making it, but you don't want to lose their profit,
yeah,
and they don't want to lose it either.
Sure.
So, I mean, by telling them that, well, by crying out, I mean, that's still not going to say, well, when it comes to conscience and money, I mean, as far as this present society is concerned, the money has ruled. The conscience has played no part.
Well, you're quite right.
So, I mean...
But you see, conscience is... I would say that we're not making just an appeal to conscience. We're making appeal to the very power interests which control the right of people to make money. That the voters constitute a power block that can regulate... Well, for instance, it's not a matter of whether or not business can make money. Business could probably make as much, if not more, money in involvement of housing for poor people as they've made in housing for rich people. I think the same thing is true of the military economy. We don't have to build airplanes and bombs in order to survive economically. We could use some of those same resources to make life a little better for ordinary people. We could build hospitals and universities instead of aircraft factories and things like this.
Mr. Gilbert, we want to thank you for calling.
All right.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Andy Young after station identification. Call it a social pressure valve, the voice of the ghetto, the voice of disgust, the voice of hope. Call it what you will, it's the voice of the people. Night Call lets people talk, and experts on the phone everywhere in the country or world offer answers to some of the problems. Having a heart-to-heart squawk. At least it gets people talking, first about their problems, and eventually to each other. Night Call has a potential cast of 200 million Americans. We now cover 30 stations in 27 cities and Washington, D.C. It could just be the most important listening post on the air today because it starts people talking. A program you should listen to, a forum to speak for yourself. If we don't start talking to each other, we'll end up shouting, and there's no telling where we'll wind up after that. Night Call, every weeknight on this station. This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, Andy Young. Our host, Del Shields.
This is Del Shields once again in New York with Night Call, and our guest, as you've already heard, is Reverend Andy Young. Throughout the country, there has been great concern about Resurrection City, and earlier in the first 50-minute portion, Reverend Young was kind enough to point out some of the various problems that the movement has faced in attempting to erect Resurrection City. Reverend Young, even concerned with the problems and aware of the many problems, have you succeeded in crystallizing the program throughout America? Have we been able actually to be able to tell people what Resurrection City is and where it plans to go? And I'd like to add one more question to that. What is to happen after June 19th?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say that Resurrection City is an attempt to take the problems of the poor out of hiding and place them on the doorstep of the nation's capital where the whole world can see them. Michael Harrington said some time ago that poverty is invisible in the United States. It's all around us, but we don't really see it. So we wanted to dramatize the problems of the poor so that they could be seen around the world. Now, that's the one purpose of Resurrection City. Out of Resurrection City, we've got to develop an action program to encourage the nation to make Congress do something about the poor, and also to encourage the agencies of government, which now have the power to do things, to do some of the things that they just have been too lazy and unconcerned to do. And I think we're beginning to do that. Now, how long that'll take, we don't really know. We don't think that it can be accomplished by June 19th. In fact, I'm pretty sure that this program we've embarked on will probably take several years before we really complete it. But just how long this phase of it, the phase of living in Resurrection City, will take, I think we still have yet to determine.
Well, Senator Percy of Illinois was reported as stating that Resurrection City has now been successful in delivering what he calls their distressful message to Congress and to the nation, and that now it may be positively answered, and he is suggesting that poor people return to their homes.
Well, I would say we may have delivered the distressful message to Senator Percy. But the number of senators and congressmen that have heard that message is very, very limited. And they won't hear it until we have delivered that message to enough of their constituents so that their mail begins to change and they begin to talk like they really intend to do something about poverty. So far, they're talking more about getting rid of us. If they talk about getting rid of poverty, we'd be glad to leave.
Exactly what is it that you want Congress to do, Reverend Young?
Oh, I'd just say provide the right to live. In almost 1,000 counties, or at least 1,000 counties in America, you have people going hungry. The Department of Agriculture gives you all kinds of runarounds about why they can't provide free food or food for these people. At the same time, we're dumping food in the river and giving it away and letting it rot. And also paying farmers millions of dollars in subsidies not to farm. Now, we're saying that a government that can do so much for the big farmer must do something for the poor sharecropper who's been forced off the farm. In terms of housing, as we said before, in terms of education, when a guy up in Boston wrote a book about education of the poor, he entitled it Death at an Early Age, and was saying, in effect, that education in America among poor people is stifling, and it produces a psychic and emotional death in the learning capacity of the child. We're saying that we're not spending nearly enough money, we're not devoting nearly enough of our attention to the problems of education in the poor.
Well, do you have a bill of specifics that you're going to offer to Congress?
Well, we've presented a bill of specifics to every agency of government, and we presented very general demands back as far as April 28th, when the first group of 100 poor people came and visited the various agencies. Basically, we're saying that the bill of legislative priorities would be full employment of jobs, a passage of a housing bill, one of which is pending, a repeal of the present compulsory work requirements, and the freeze on the number of children that are added to the welfare rolls. Give poor farmers the right to organize, and poor people generally. You see, the National Labor Relations Act does not cover the poor. It covers certain middle-income jobs, and it covers the labor which is presently organized, but there are many categories of workers, some 18 million, that are not covered by that.
Reverend Young, I hate to interrupt, but there are a number of calls backed up now, and
sure,
we want to give the listeners a chance. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, if you're calling from out of town, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. We'll welcome Mr. Martin from Seattle, Washington, who is listening to Night Call over radio station KVOW. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening, Reverend Abbott. I was going to ask, perhaps you can explain, it's kind of hard to understand the basis behind the thinking of the supplemental or guaranteed annual income.
Mm-hmm.
By this, I mean, if once a person got on there, wouldn't they be inclined to stay on? Wouldn't this be more or less robbing his birthright, you might say, to go out and get a job, even though it may be for only $3,100 a year rather than the $3,000?
Well, put it this way, I would say that as long as there is work available, that people are willing and ready to work. The problem is that, I think the last statistics I've heard is some 41,000 jobs per week are going out of existence as a result of machines. If you just look around you and see that, there are no more elevator operators, there are no more men building roads, there are no more people picking cotton. Millions of jobs no longer exist. Now, this means that our economy is going to have to go into a tremendous transition. And all we're saying is that just as the government subsidizes big industries during periods of transition, that it would subsidize people who are now unable to find jobs. Now, younger generations coming up that would be adequately trained to work in an automated era, would certainly not be carried on a guaranteed annual income, but would be trained for meaningful work. The guaranteed annual income is mainly for people who cannot find work. For instance, take a man who's worked on a job as an elevator operator for 20 years, and he's now 55, and he's got, 10 more years toward retirement. When he's laid off, it's almost too late for him to be retrained for another job for the next 10 years. I would say we begin to retrain him where possible, but whether we can retrain him or not, we should provide him a right to live. and support his family.
The only thing I have to answer to that, sir, is I don't want to sound like a recruiter, but the Boeing company here in the state of Washington is crying for people of any kind of experience. The basic salary is $260 an hour. I don't believe that there is an age requirement upper limit. I do know that they have been crying for people since, over 4 years now. They can't get enough people. Now, this is not a skilled labor. This is unskilled, semi-skilled, and they train.
Very good. Now, one of the things we also recommended, not in this campaign, but back at the White House conference to fulfill these rights, was a federal employment agency, a national labor pool, in fact. I think part of the problem is that the average person, say, in Mississippi who's unemployed goes to Chicago or Cleveland simply because he has relatives there. It would never dawn on him to come out to Seattle, Washington, because he doesn't know anybody there and doesn't even know that Boeing exists. Now, somehow, we've got to find a way that we move people where the work is.
Good point.
And right now, we're saying that the government and the Department of Labor does not take the responsibility for coordinating our labor market and getting the most out of it. And they certainly should do that. But then after that's done, all those that they can't provide employment for or relate to jobs that are needed should still be allowed to live.
Absolutely. Okay. No,
thank you.
No argument. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling, sir. This is NICOL in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. We welcome your comments and your conversation. Our guest tonight is Reverend Andy Young of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Our next caller is from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, who's listening to NICOL over radio station WAAA-FM in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome to NICOL, Mr. Chetty. Hello?
Hello?
Welcome to NICOL, sir.
Hello? Yes? Call?
Yes, it is, sir. We can hear you.
Beautiful. This is beautiful. Glad to hear that. Brother, Mr. Young.
Yes, sir.
We're getting a little feedback. I don't know if you're near...
Let me turn down the...
Turn down your radio. Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah. Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Young?
Mm-hmm.
In your in the city that you have constructed there, are the people there docile? Are they energetic?
Yeah, they're very energetic.
They are?
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. We've got people from about 20 different cities, from New York, everywhere from New York and San Francisco on down to Mississippi and Alabama, and got some from North Carolina, but mostly the East Coast.
Uh-huh. Well, what have you done to appeal for them all over the country?
Well,
what was the organization plan for that?
Organizing people in 15 different cities, and then others just decided to call in and see if they couldn't come in on their own and bring a busload. In fact, if you could organize a couple of busloads from Winston-Salem to come in on the 19th, we'd certainly be glad to have you.
Winston-Salem, you said?
Isn't that where you're from?
No, sir. I'm not from Winston-Salem.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm speaking to you from New York at the present.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, sir. We got our wires crossed.
Okay.
Mr. Young.
Uh-huh. Well, New York's okay. We got some folk from there, too.
Uh-huh. What did you think of the people from New York that showed there? What were they? What were the population of it? Was it a mixed element, or was this a all-out black element?
Well, they're mostly black and Puerto Rican. I think one or two whites, but mostly black and Puerto Rican.
Oh, that's where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know why I'm asking this, because it's pretty hard to garrote the blacks in New York into doing something tangible. They're building a hospital up there on 135th Street, you know, and Harlem area itself is needed this hospital a long time.
Yeah.
And come to find out, it's actually, you know, outdated hospital because the modern facilities and things that they have now that couldn't go into this type of hospital because New York City budget, matter of fact, hasn't even laid out the proper funds for the Harlem area.
Uh-huh.
And it really is a problem.
That's the people of Harlem's problem, I think. That's what we're fighting about, that the government should have put enough money into a community as populated as Harlem
so that there would be hospitals all over Hall.
Oh, well,
Reverend Young, would you hold your response? And the listener who's calling from New York, we must break for our station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. You can hold on if you like. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Andy Young after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, Andy Young. Our host, Del Shields.
And we're back with Night Call, and we'd like to welcome some of the stations who joined us nightly for the second half hour.
Hello.
Mr. Evans is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB. And Mr. Evans, we want to kind of center our questions to Reverend Young around Resurrection City.
Okay, beautiful. Beautiful. Mr. Young.
Yes, sir.
Resurrection City, what I understand, is whether it's police property or what, but what I understand from the news media, or if they're lying, they more or less might be because they have all kinds of distorted information for the public. They say that the city has people that's been looting and ransacking the people's quarters.
But we have had as many as 4,000 people who have come into Resurrection City at one time or other. And whenever you get that many people together, you are going to have some police problems. The other thing is that Resurrection City, for most of the day, is completely open to people from Washington, and we've had thousands of visitors a day. Now, whenever you have that many people circulating around an area where you have no locks at all, you are going to have some stealing. I don't think we've had anything more than, you know, the kind of normal little petty theft that you'd get in any school or which you get in some churches. The kinds of discipline problems that we've had have been, you know, ranged, been a wide variety. We had some kids that were, you know, just wouldn't go to bed at night. And we had people that even though we weren't supposed to drink there. And I think some of them we had to ask to go home. But basically, we're dealing with all of our problems without the aid of armed policemen, and we're trying to show that you can create a community. We don't even call the people who keep order, we call peace brothers, because, you know, they don't go around hitting people over the head or putting them in jail. They reason with them. They try to work out disagreements and settle, you know, fusses. Without violence, and so far we've had a fair measure of success.
Mr. Evans,
yeah.
I hate to cut you short, but we have a number of out-of-town calls.
Okay,
and
beautiful.
I'm more than certain that Reverend Young will answer some of your questions. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. Our guest from Washington, D.C. is Reverend Andy Young. We welcome our next caller, Mr. Chatty, who we thought we had earlier, from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, radio station WAAA. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes, sir. Mr. Young?
Yes.
I would like to know precisely how receptive the administration is to your movement. I know they're receptive to the NRA and to...
Mr. Chatty?
Various oil interests.
Mr. Chatty?
Yes, sir.
We're having difficulty hearing you. Is your radio playing?
You shouldn't be getting any feedback from it now.
Well, let me answer that.
If you'd be kind enough, sir, we're getting an awful distortion. I think we'll let Reverend Young answer you, and if you'd like to call back on another line, we'd be more than happy to accept your call. Will you please?
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
It's true that Congress and the administration is far more receptive to the big oil interest and the National Rifle Association, and that's one of the reasons we have to be here, to make them responsive to poor people. And we're going to stay here until the administration is responsive to poor people. Right now, we'd have to say that we have been treated courteously by the administration. And they've been responsive to that extent. However, I'm not so sure that they've been responsive to the point where they're ready to change anything, make any major changes. The Department of Agriculture did make some concessions about providing free food and extending their commodities program and spending some $60 million that they probably wouldn't have spent had we not been here. And OEO agreed to fund some $25.4 million in projects that they had not agreed to fund prior to the Poor People's Campaign. So there's been some minimal response from within the agencies, but we're just beginning to get the administration to respond to the needs of the poor.
We'll take another call, Reverend Young, this
okay.
time from Memphis, Tennessee. Miss Bolton is listening to Night Call over WDIA in Memphis. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello, I speak to Reverend Young.
Speaking.
Reverend Young, I heard you state earlier that it would take several years for you to complete your purpose in Resurrection City.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to know, do you mean that Resurrection City would stay there in Washington until you can get Congress to pass a bill to give you the things that you want?
No, I don't think that Resurrection City will stay as it is for the next 3 years. But there probably will be some gathering of poor people around Washington, if not permanently, regularly, 4 years to come. You're from Nashville. You'll remember that it took us really from about 1960 to 1964 to get the South desegregated on lunch counters alone. That was a four-year struggle. That didn't cost the nation anything. The kinds of problems we're raising now will cost the nation. They will require expenditures of federal funds. And we're much stronger now than we were in the South in those days, and know a little more. So I think that even though it's a mortal fight, in 2 or 3 years, we should be able to see great improvements. Now, how do we stay here? We're not quite sure yet. It may be that we have to come back and rebuild Resurrection City every 2 years, or it may be that we would keep a delegation of poor people, a revolving delegation of poor people in Washington year-round in a kind of lobbying situation. But the point I'm trying to make is that whatever happens to us in Resurrection City, SCLC and the Poor People's Campaign are committed to continue until we put an end to poverty in this country.
May I ask you another question?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know, where do the people live? I mean, do they stay in tents or houses?
Well, we've built some little plywood homes, which are about, I guess, maybe 10 feet wide and 20 feet long in there. And we have cots and mattresses, and people have fixed them up quite nice. In fact, some people have put television sets in them. They've gotten some little refrigerators and put pictures up on the walls and painted slogans on the outside. And in fact, I was going through the other day and one lady was down on her knees waxing her plywood floor. So people have really made nice homes for them. And some of them say that, like one man told me, that he wasn't thinking about leaving, that he'd never had his own home before. And he was going to stay there until we said it was time to go.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, if you're calling from out of town, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. Up to this point, we have not worked out an arrangement for you to call collect, so if you'd like to call, we'll pay for the call. Reverend Young, we'll take our next call from Cleveland, Ohio, Mrs. Jameson, who's listening to Night Call over WERE. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello.
Hello.
Reverend Young?
Yes.
I think what they're doing there in Washington is wonderful. But I think, you know, what is going on and what you're trying to do for the people all over the world is pretty much in vain for the simple reason. If you know your scripture, I'm sure you do. Mm-hmm. Do you not?
Yes.
Well, if Christ tells us that we will always have the poor with us, right?
Well, possibly.
This is what he says.
Well, I wouldn't take that quite so literally, though.
Well, this is what Christ says, and he said this.
Well, if you remember the situation, a lady was about to pour oil on his feet.
Right.
On his head, I guess, anoint his head with perfume. And the disciples thought that it would be better to spend that
for the poor.
For the poor. And
right.
He said that in view of the fact that he was about to die,
mm-hmm.
That he was really saying that you can always do something for the poor, but there will only be a few more days when you can do something for me. I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that he was saying absolutely you always had to have poor people. Now, he also went on in the latter part of Matthew and said to feed the hungry and clothe the naked.
Right.
And so we may not do away with all of the poor around the world, but I think in a nation as rich as the United States is, there's no need for anybody to go hungry. There's no need for anybody to be naked. There's no need for people not to have medical care, a job, a decent education, and a house. I don't think Jesus would quarrel with that, do you?
No, I don't either.
Okay, then.
Now, I think he wants for us to have all things.
Mm-hmm.
The best of things, but we don't have them in this world. I think it's because of other people that we don't have them.
Well, you know, you people in Cleveland, though, prove that you can make things better. I think a couple of years ago, people in Cleveland thought that there was no more hope for Cleveland, and yet you got together and you registered the vote. You worked. We were there for almost a year helping, you remember,
mm-hmm.
With Dr. King, and you got a young man as mayor that not only is a black mayor, but from all the reports I get, he's a good mayor.
Well,
and there are not many cities in America that can say that they've got good mayors.
Well, we think he's a wonderful person.
Well, very good.
He's doing much for this town.
But that's a result of the work of the people of Cleveland, both black and white. And all we're saying is that black and white people across this nation, red and brown people, can get together and work, and we can put an end to poverty.
Well, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Well, join us on June 19th, and or come before and stay a while.
I'd love to. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest calling in from Washington, D.C. is Reverend Andy Young. And Reverend Young, I'd like to pose this question to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have spent, I guess, close to about 43 minutes, and we have been developing some of the problems that are facing you in Resurrection City. But the press in this country is very powerful. And so is, of course, the area of communications. And it seems that much of the criticism is being leveled at the leadership.
Yeah.
I would like to know from you, what if there are problems? And if so, what can we possibly do about them?
Well, I think that, the problems are not necessarily the problems that the press are writing about. Our problem is, how do we organize a campaign that will mobilize this entire nation against poverty? Now, it really doesn't worry me, and I don't think we have any problems, because it took us about 2 months to do this in Birmingham alone. It took us about 3 months in Selma. We were in Cleveland almost 6 months. And I'm saying that the press is being very unfair to expect us to do things according to their press deadlines.
Hold your point for a minute, Reverend Young. We're going to break for a station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Stay tuned to the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Andy Young after station identification. In our city and state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension or see poverty as the real problem or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree at least that there is a crisis and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, Andy Young. Our host, Del Shields.
We're back with Night Call, and Reverend Young, you were responding to my question. Are you there?
Yeah, well, right. You know, I think that the press has the problem of day-by-day deadlines. And they've either got to find a story or create one. Now, we happen to be in a meeting for 2 or 3 hours making decisions. If we don't come out with a story by their deadline, the chances are they're forced to write a story that there's disagreement in the meeting. Well, the chances are there is disagreement in the meeting. And one of the things that Dr. King always encouraged and that Dr. Abernathy has continued is the free exchange of ideas and a coming to a common mind. We've worked this way as a staff. We work together very well under Dr. Abernathy's leadership. But as I said earlier, the problems are a lot more complicated. We won't be able to do things quite as automatically as we have in the past. I'm afraid there isn't much we can do but try to explain this to the press, and I think we do that on a day-to-day basis. They have their own opinions, too, and quite often they make their stories on the basis of their opinions and not on the basis of the realities. Now, I'll remind you, though, if you remember the kinds of stories that the press was writing about the March on Washington in 1963, right up until 2 days before the march, it was the same kind of struggle about leadership struggles, about it turning into violence. While I'll admit that it's probably far more dangerous and difficult now than it was in 1963, I would think that we are in control of this situation and will probably continue to be.
Reverend Young, we're going to welcome some additional calls, this time from Mrs. Holland, who is a New York listener. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Yes.
I'd like to ask Reverend Young what kind of facilities they have for the children, for teaching.
Oh, very good facilities. We have two very nice daycare centers. They're very well staffed, the children are very well taken care of. There was a period when it was pretty wet that we moved them out of Resurrection City temporarily.
I would expect so.
But children probably get better medical care and teaching here than they do anywhere in the country.
May I ask you another question?
Sure.
Perhaps if you stay,
mm-hmm.
I am a teacher, and school will be closing soon.
Mm-hmm.
If you should stay, do you think you will have a problem there? I've been trying to find some way to help.
Well, we'll be glad to have you come on down the day school closes and stay as long as
when
you will.
When does school close for them there?
No, Resurrection City schools won't close. We'll have school for children, and we have a freedom school going. We have a university for the poor, which is leading discussions among the young adult population. And there is quite a comprehensive educational program, workshops on nonviolence and group dynamics in the afternoon, community organization, Plus the fact that people are getting a tremendous education in how the government works just by taking part in our demonstration.
Yes, by doing and being there. This the press doesn't recognize.
I think they're just beginning to see some of these things.
May I make one more point?
Mm-hmm.
I was told by someone who had been there, and I'd rather like to hear it from you,
mm-hmm.
that this could be cleared up, that there was dissension. I don't think that possibly it's as bad as it could be made to sound.
Well, let me say this. You know, my wife and I have lived together for 14 years. We've had our share of dissension, and yet we live together.
I mean, this is part of living.
I think that's sort of the way it is. It's sort of dissension within the family. It's hard to bring together Mexican-Americans, Indians, poor whites, black nationalists, middle-class Negroes, and poor Negroes together, and not have some kind of dissension and disagreement. But the fact that we're living together and continuing is a miracle in itself.
Well, I'm thrilled, but if I may be given to someone behind the lines,
mm-hmm.
and I'll give my, you know, particulars to them, I would be more than happy to come down to help if I can.
Okay, well, we do have an office. You're calling from New York?
Yes, I am.
I think if you just ask for the telephone number of the Poor People's Campaign for information, they'll be able to tell you how to get down. And there are many groups planning to come down on the 19th.
I don't know if I can. I'll try.
Okay, then.
But if I can't, I'll come down afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling.
Mr. Shields, could you get me back to the person behind?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Night Call in New York will accept our next call from Memphis, Tennessee, Mrs. Whiting, who's listening to Night Call over radio station WDIA. Welcome to Night Call.
Thank you.
Hello.
Can I speak to Reverend Young?
Speaking.
The question that I had planned to ask you, the lady before asked, you know, how do you contact Resurrection City?
Well, I tell you, in Memphis, you would go to Mr. Fanyon.
Dr. Holmes?
Mr. Fanyon at the Guaranteed Income Center of the AME Church. Do you know where that is?
Yes, uh-huh.
And he has an office there, and they'll be planning to bring some people up from Memphis or contact Reverend James Lawson or Reverend Jackson.
Thank you.
Okay.
And I want to congratulate you all on the great job that you're doing for not only America, the entire world. And I know you must be under a great strain, you know, from losing your leader, our leader.
Well, that's true.
And I want to congratulate all of you, you know, Reverend Abernathy, and I don't know all of the names, Jackson, and just everybody. You're doing a beautiful job.
Well, you remember Bevel and Samson and the others who were there with you in Memphis.
Yes, I know them, and I used to belong to Lawson's church.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say may God bless you all.
Well, thank you very much, and you pray for us.
I surely will. Bye.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
This is Night Call in New York, and Reverend Young will take our next call from South Bend, Indiana, Mrs. Goodall, who's listening to Night Call over radio station WSBT. Welcome to Night Call.
Good evening. Reverend Young, I have one question. Maybe more than one. I would like your definition of poor.
That's a pretty hard thing to say. I think mainly we're concerned with the problems of people who are not getting enough to eat, who are not getting an adequate education. I think the government defines the poverty line as something that people who are living on less than $3,000 a year. We haven't been, any rigid definition of poor. We just think that it's a shame for people not to have enough in a land that has so much.
Well, I agree with that, of course. But a Catholic family with 8 children, mm-hmm. 4 in college, are quite poor.
That's right.
They're getting just enough to eat, paying high tuition for everything they have. And so they would be included in your poor people.
They certainly would.
All right, and now, another, one more question. The lady who just called from New York about education for mm-hmm. people in Resurrection City, is there any religious education given to these children?
Any religious education?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, to the younger ones,
And, of course, we think all of this is religious education. You know, I'm a minister, and I really came to work with Dr. King and Reverend Abernathy in Southern Christian Leadership Conference because...
Well, I belong to SCLC, so...
Uh-huh. Because I felt as though this was the kind of living religion that we needed to be practicing these days. So that when we teach people to love one another, to settle their problems without killing and without destroying property, and how to organize to bring about something more nearly like God's kingdom here on earth, I think that's religious education.
Are you recruiting?
Yes, we are. And we have church meetings three times a week throughout the city of Washington, three nights a week. And we're having support meetings all across the country, mostly in churches. And, well, that's basically our religious education program.
Well, I suggest we look to St. Mark for that.
Well, thank you.
You know, the commandment, the great commandment.
Uh-huh.
I am Caucasian, by the way.
Well.
But I have heard Dr. King speak in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very proud that I was in the choir.
Well, very good.
And he was a wonderful man.
And you know, your opening question, I think I'd like to go back to, because we want to reassure everybody that poor people in America are not just black people. That Resurrection City is made up of black people, of white people from Appalachia, from Chicago, New York.
Misinterpretation.
No, I know.
I think the press has done a great deal of damage in this area.
Well, they've pointed out the problems of our getting together racially, but they haven't pointed out the beauty of the fact that we are trying.
Mrs. Goodall, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Reverend Young, I'd like to pose one final question to you.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who believe that if Resurrection City fails, that this will be the end of the civil rights movement. How do you respond?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think we're just sort of digging in, and we're going to be around fighting to put an end to poverty as long as we've got life and breath. What form it'll take, I don't know. If Resurrection City doesn't work, we already are discussing plans for other forms of the war on poverty that would be directed out of the civil rights movement or what's now really a human rights movement. We might fail this time, but it won't be us, just us, that fails. It'll be America that fails. That it will be America that fails to extend the American dream to all of her citizens. Right now, of the 200 million Americans, only about 150 million
Reverend Young,
the blessings of America.
We thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Okay, then.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
This is Del Shields in New York. Our guest has been Reverend Andrew Young. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station. A white man talks about jobs for black people and other minority groups. Former Assistant Secretary of Commerce H.C. McClellan now heads the Management Council for Merit Employment in Los Angeles. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church. Presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.